My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The catch that may take many Nintendo maniacs by surprise. You have to buy a completely new hardware system to play the new Super Mario 4 game.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dassler, and with me, as always,
Ben Vanel here, and chomping down on a medium-sized Red Bull, as always.
Not as always.
No, that's true.
No. Sometimes I don't.
Sometimes you have... Monster?
I'm a real gamer, so I'm drinking an energy drink, and my name is Adam Knox. I'm brave enough to admit that.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, I tell you what, some good news and some bad news this
Shuffling
week.
Us off the Red Bull chat cool, very rapidly, okay.
Yeah,
noticed.
Hey, I've got the energy to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, someone's Bull. Got wings.
Can we get the good news first?
Do you want to do like compliment sandwich style?
Okay, yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a sandwich, dude. Microsoft's laid off a bunch of people.
Oh, no.
No, we could do some good news first. Let's get
the bad out of the way.
Okay. Right? You reckon?
Let's get the negative out of the way first, and then it's all smooth sailing for the rest of the
But pod. Do we want to okay. do a bit of good? Because people have already had some bad news that I'm drinking a big Red Bull. They've got a fucking
Yeah, they're disappointed
that.
In your diet. Yeah, no, let's do something good.
Hey, look, here's... We're going to talk about the Microsoft stuff, which is, I think more important than this.
Yeah.
But...
it is a comedy show, so let's do some lighthearted stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
So Waka Waka's been in the news lately. Big funny glasses and mustaches have been...
Yeah?
See, there's a story about them.
They've also been laid off, unfortunately.
God damn it. Groucho Marx lost his job. Shit.
You never see on Conan, like... The guest comes in and he's like, so should we get the bad news out of the way first? Or?
Yeah, but that's in the monologue. The monologue is sort of the headlines. The monologue has to kind of touch on everything.
Did you hear Groucho Marx fired an elephant in his pajamas? How that elephant got in his pajamas, he'll never know.
Whoop. Did I tell you guys this? I was walking past a house in my street and this old guy came out and I had my dog and he went, does your dog bite? And I went, aha, that's not my dog. And he just lost his... He looked genuinely so excited that someone of my era like also knew that classic gag.
Weirdly enough, you did tell us that.
Yeah. I know. I can't remember how it came up, but...
It came up because you...
You were like,
burst
hey guys.
In through the door like Kramer.
Get a load of this.
You threw money down on the table. You went, I'm out. And also...
Good news, boys.
He had this look on his face like he was going to get me with this like old school joke. And he just... The fact that someone already knew it sort of seemed to like catch him off guard but like really delight him in a like the kids are all right kind of way. I mean, I'm nearly 40, but this to him, I'm a spring chicken.
So,
anyway,
well, on the topic of your old-fashioned vaudevillian sense of humor, you posted an article. It's like this fucking dreary news week. You came in with a shining ray of light piercing its way through the clouds saying, boys, Miyamoto's been at it again in the past.
Yeah, there was a report during the week about some evidence surfaced of an aborted Donkey Kong game that was being worked on. This has kind of been, like this pops up from time to time. Where is this goddamn article? I had the link up and it's the fucking wrong ass one. But anyway, this was being worked on by Vicarious Visions.
Right.
The Tony Hawk people around like 2016. So like pre-Switch, it was going to be like an open world 3D Donkey Kong Country game this with sort of its own identity. I think in the report they sort of mentioned that he would have been like slightly different kind of character model to even like the what they use of him in all the ongoing Nintendo games.
Because Donkey Kong Country and Tropical Freeze had both come out by that point, but Rare wanted to do something other than Donkey Kong after Tropical Freeze, right?
Retro,
I mean, sorry.
Yeah, yeah, I think Retro have been working on something.
Well, and now they've been doing Metroid Prime 4 for a while. But like in between, they were working on other stuff that people rumored about, like a racing game and something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so Vicarious Visions were doing this Donkey Kong game and Miyamoto picks his head into the office again.
So it would have been, it sounds cool. It would have been like sort of, using a lot of Tony Hawk style stuff. Like you would have sort of had a lot of kinetic movement, like kind of grinding around like rails that were.
Right.
I think the setup was that you'd be on this big island, Donkey Kong Island, this big factory's opened up and you're, apparently they were still like very early mechanic testing stage. They hadn't gotten too deep into the story, but it'd be a bit of like a, I guess like an environmental sort of having to, yeah, shut down this evil factory or whatever. And yeah, you would grind around on rails in these levels. And the quote here is, Donkey Kong would slide down vines and ropes on his feet via a new feature called vine grinding. When doing this, Donkey Kong would have banana peels as makeshift shoes. This was in response to feedback from Miyamoto being concerned about Donkey Kong getting rope burn on his feet.
It's so funny that bit, like the specific detail, like the fact that the greatest of all time is also the worst of all time.
Yeah.
Well, but his feedback is always like, what if your main character was my fucking fox guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is it. I mean, I love hearing about these kind of aborted like ideas for games, anything that exists where it's like a little bit of footage, a little bit of concept art. I love seeing this stuff. I wish they shared this stuff more just from like a interest in it from a creative point of view. But also I feel like we're with these things that are kind of kept under lock and key and sort of these stories never see the light of day, I feel like we're being deprived of such a treasure trove of tidbits of Miyamoto sticking his nose. I would love to see a master list of every time he has given feedback on a game that's being developed like not by him. And you know, there's tons of examples where he got it right, and then there's misfires that he's. But I would just love to see a master list of every little nugget that he's given out around the office.
The little details like that really are, though. Like he's right, and it gives it a lot of character if he has.
Well, that's his guy.
The banana stuff.
That's
on
his
there,
little.
Yeah.
That's his little guy.
Yeah.
And then he goes into his office. He's like, "What the fuck is this? This looks ridiculous." Put some banana peels on those feet.
Yeah.
He's going to injure himself. Well, that's my little guy.
Get him to wear gloves on the bottom of his, because they're technically hands.
Yeah.
You might not
yeah.
know that about yeah. chimpanzees and gorillas and such.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of thing where it's like, yeah, video games are all about, especially platformers and this conceptual sort of grinding thing. It's like, it's all about the tactile nature of, you know, what you're playing, what you're interacting with. And creating that tactileness, tangibility with, you know, tricks and fake things and stuff. So it's like, well, yeah, you got to remember that people will be thinking about that contact, you know, like people will be thinking about his big chimpanzee hands on a vine and being like, well, wouldn't he be grabbing? How is he sliding?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, this is
like,
the other thing
so
too.
It's basic, like, but it's like
Vicarious Visions at this point, you know, they've done a lot of Tony Hawk and they're excited to work on this game. It's something a bit different. They're like, we got one rule, no skateboards or anything even approaching the look and feel of a skateboard. So they've just got him raw dogging the vine. Mm. And then first bit of feedback from on high is there's got to be something between the feet and the rail. It can't just be...
The Sonic Adventure 2 thing where they did like a cross-branding thing with soap shoes, old shoes that you could grind rails with, do it like that. Miyamoto walking into going into Super Smash Brothers and being like, why are they fighting though? Get them to have an argument before the fight.
Yeah.
People will be thinking about it. Brother.
Make them little toys. That's kind of the setup of, they've kind of gotten away from that. But
In the first one, they're not. In Melee, they are.
Oh, right,
in the first
one,
they're just there.
Right.
But there was an ad where they get into a fight.
Right.
Yeah, in the big costumes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's there.
It's not a tournament. It's not the Iron Fist tournament.
It's just sort of fucking happening. Like Master Hands in the first one, I think, in like as the final boss thing, I think. But
I swear there's a thing in the like 64 little cutscene where they're little Master Hand kind of pulls them out of a little toy box.
I think that's from Melee.
Okay.
It could be in the first one too, and I'm misremembering.
But either way, that could be a Miyamoto. Hey, like, this is how we get around the multiverse crossing over nature of things. It's just all happening in some kid's bedroom.
Yeah, some kids making them smash against each other. Yeah, that's
it. Problem solved.
Yeah.
But this Donkey Kong game, it sounds cool. So it got cancelled because Activision buying Vicarious Visions. And
right.
Well, it was basically the top of Activision being like, we don't want to focus on this.
Yeah.
We want you to focus more on the Crash Bandicoot remasters that they put out. And it would have been cool to see this come to fruition, especially since, you know, they were working on this so long ago that then, you know, the movie that's come out, the Mario movie, like Donkey Kong's a big part of that. Mm-hmm. So I bet it's kind of weird that the Switch has kind of come and gone without a new big Donkey Kong game on it. And had this have landed, you know, it probably would have gotten a big boost from Donkey Kong being such a key part of the movie. And now they're making that extra bit of the theme park with him in it.
Yeah.
Donkey Kong will be back.
That's it, right? It's, if anything, it's more likely than ever that he'll be coming back soon.
On what, though?
Yeah, how's he going to get here? Because he can't just walk. That'll take too long.
Yeah.
He could swing between vines, but that's a little passe. That's been done.
He could grind.
What are you talking about?
I do like that it's not just like, hey,
he would simply get rope burn on these vines.
Of course, I'm an idiot.
I do like that it's not like, it's not just like, hey, he'd get rope burn on his feet. So maybe think about, I know, you know, skateboard or so. I like that it's specifically, it has to be banana peels on his feet.
Yeah.
It's not just like, hey, put something in between. You guys think about something that fits in the story or conceptually in the world you're creating. It's no, he's hung up on like, it simply must be that he's wearing banana peels as little shoes.
You know, that material that never breaks apart, the banana peel, that sturdy material that he can grind on.
Well, yes, you're right. Like, Tommy, well, they're not releasing this game on the Switch. There's just no time. The Switch is being sunsetted, as they say, in the business.
Going off to a farm.
I guess if it's not going to be on the Nintendo Switch, it can't be on anything.
Well, you must not have been on the Nintendo partners meeting earnings call, which I was and fully understood clearly from what they described it as.
Okay.
Nintendo did their earnings call thing. And as part of that, and then since followed up on by a tweet from the president of Nintendo, Mr. Furukawa.
Which is good. The tweet just starts with him going, Furukawa here.
Yeah.
Given the keys to the account.
Hi there, Furukawa here. I know, it's very like dystopian city announcement coming on over the speakers.
Yeah.
Furukawa here. All citizens are to remain inside until June, when we will have a 2024 remaining Switch Games Direct. So he made it clear that there will be a Direct in June.
Yep.
I think it was June.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that will have the rest
only of 20... Switch stuff.
For the rest of 2024, and then sometime in this fiscal year, which goes until next March, they will announce the successor to the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah. Yeah,
but there will be no news about that in this June Direct. Yeah. Maybe the most forward planned expectation management they've ever done. It's also, it's funny because the way that this has all apparently been delayed, they've kind of been backed into having to announce this earnings report stuff. Like, I'm sure this isn't the dream of formally acknowledging the existence of it, but it's like, it's been funny seeing the countdown to this happens at the same time every year, and it's like, well, they are going to have to mention it in this, and it will be the first time they've ever gone on record and said, we are working on a Switch successor.
Yeah.
Very weird way of it, finally being rolled out.
Was it in the tweet that he said, look, I'm sure everyone's expecting us to roll this out the way that we did the Switch, where it was like, we announced it in March and it came out, or whatever it was.
He mentioned that it will have been 9 years since we revealed the existence of the Switch, which was 2015. March 2015, they did a similar thing where they went, we're working on the successor to the Wii U, but it wasn't an announcement of the console. It was still
because we
2 years.
Calling it the NX until 2017.
Yeah, that's true. But it feels like, and I guess other people were I guess the planned schedule is not going to mirror the Nintendo Switch anymore. It can't, you know, based on this timeline. So
it still could. Yes. I mean, the fiscal year, it's like it'll. He's saying it'll come out within that window, and that's like March.
He's saying the announcement will happen by March, but that means it could still happen in September or whatever. Like, I think they probably, from the sounds of how those rumors of the delays and stuff were coming out, I bet they don't even have a firm date still.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe not. But then it'll be interesting to see, like, what could possibly be in this June, like what little bits of drips and drabs. Yeah, and that, I mean, just even that move of having to go like, hey, yeah, a new thing is coming out probably, you know, within the next year. That's kind of, you know, you can feel them having, any company would sort of hold off on saying that while you've still got stuff to release on the current, because it immediately gives it this feel of like, we're on the way out here. Don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Save your money for the getting the console that's going to be out in 6 months.
Yeah, I guess it's to get ahead of, like, you know, because like stock prices, you know, always go up before an announcement, and then if something good gets announced, they go up more. But if it's, they don't want to get this expectation built up and then not fulfill it, it's just not good for, you know, stability, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe we'll be seeing a June Direct where they announce November this year coming out on the Switch, DK Ropeburn.
Oh.
We've kept rid of the bananas. The point of the game is that
the point of the game
burn.
Ropeburn. It was all a ploy by Miyamoto to get this game shut down. I'd love to know how that came at that partnership is so random to me. I'd love to know how that came about.
Looking for a lot more like third party sort of people around that time, I think. Like, Like Retro themselves were that at one point.
It would be cool if they had more of that going on so that they could have all of their IPs kind of popping all at once instead of it being like there's two teams in there that can work on a game, and if they're not doing it, then it'll be 10, 15, 20 years until you get a new F-Zero game.
I mean, it is working for them. Like, there's nothing about their model that has failed, like, financially.
The Mario versus Donkey Kong game and the Princess Peach game, I think both hit 1 million sales.
Wow.
And they're, you know, not mainline.
And not well received.
Middling reviews, not like straight by the numbers styles of games too. So it just goes to show you that like core crew of like that Mario universe, probably off the back of the movie, is really is like really strong. Like that's got to be very like reassuring for them going into, presumably from what all the rumors have said, launching the new thing with a new Mario. So
yeah, and they're both very mobile friendly games in terms of handheld mode Switch stuff,
kid friendly.
Kid friendly, and you know, the Japanese market is still all about the handheld games and anything you can play on the train and stuff. And so yeah, with those characters, those first party, you know, big hitters. Even though Mario versus Donkey Kong sounded like it was kind of just not very good.
Yeah, it's
Princess Peach.
They're both
like
kind of 7 out of 10s across the board. Like,
I think Princess Peach hit with kids pretty well. Like, it's a polished game. It didn't run well, but you know,
Mario versus
7-year-old
Donkey
doesn't
Kong
care.
Is not good.
Yeah.
But you know, it just speaks to the power of having strong characters and a strong brand like this under your stable. You know, franchises like Ghostwire Tokyo and Hi-Fi Rush and
Evil Within could get a third man. So okay, Microsoft is fucking nuts, and this sucks. This news came out this morning for
like
us.
The worst possible eventuality of a company buying up smaller companies.
This is, I mean, it feels like there's one of these every couple of weeks. Oh, this studio got shuttered. That's a shame.
Well, so in this same week, I don't think we talked about it last week because I think it came out during this week. The people, I forget the name of the studio, I'm sorry. The people who made Olly Olly.
Roll 7.
Roll 7 and Rollerdrome. Thank you. if you can jump in with the nouns that I clearly am trying to search for.
We're doing Mad Libs.
But with recognition like this, how do these studios possibly get closed?
So they got closed down and some others as well in that same sort of wave. And they've all been shit. And for the people who work at them, it sucks. For us as people who play the games, obviously the ones that we're going to sort of feel more emotion about are the ones that make games we like. That's natural. But same level of like, fuck man, what a shit industry to be in at the moment for people who are working in it.
It's insane, right? Because it's like Embracer Group is one of the big ones that have acquired a bunch of stuff in the past 4 or 5 years and us shutting them down.
Well, and now
Microsoft's doing it now.
Embracer Group is split into multiple things now. They're like, right. So that's, but so the Microsoft stuff, which is the most recent, is they are out of nowhere too, shutting down Arkane Austin, which is not Arkane Lyon, who are the, they're the Deathloop people. Arkane Austin made Prey in 2017 and they made Redfall most recently.
Yes.
And were up until 5 hours before the announcement working on a big update for Redfall that was coming out this month.
That
is now not happening, and Microsoft have said we're going to do make goods for the DLC that people bought and we didn't deliver, blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. Fucking, here's a make good. Let them fucking make it good.
Yeah. Tango, pay them and let them release the thing.
Tango Gameworks, who make Ghostwire Tokyo, The Two Evil Within games, Hi-Fi Rush.
Yep.
They're shut down.
They're shut down.
And two others called Alpha Dog Games and Roundhouse. So Roundhouse are getting moved over to Elder Scrolls Online development.
Yeah.
And Alpha Dog Games were making mobile games and they're shut down as well. I didn't really know either of those. I'm sorry. But
And yeah, these, like you said, all of these ones that get announced, that we've talked about before, they're all sad. And, you know, to varying levels on a personal level of how we've engaged with the games. But this is just such a weird one.
Yeah.
Because, like, we were talking just before the show that, Microsoft kind of really have lent on the games that these companies have made. Like, Redfall obviously had a very bad launch, but they were really putting that front and center.
Yeah.
And, like, Hi-Fi Rush, they did the surprise release thing after. Like, they really were, you know, using a lot of these IPs that these companies have as, like, a putting them front and center and being like, these are the games that, these are the games that you come to Microsoft for. Right. These are the games that you get an Xbox for.
It's made all of their talk about, like, hey, our job, they were saying it very specifically with Redfall, is like, our job would be to support studios like that to be able to make it better. We messed up by getting them to put, bullshit. Like, one year later, clear, obvious bullshit that you didn't mean. They were saying about Hi-Fi Rush, like, we're satisfied with it and it's been a great hit for us on Game Pass, blah, blah, blah. Oh, cool. So that's fucking meaningless.
Yeah.
And I could see with Tango. As close as you're getting to having a little kind of mascot-y kind of guy. Very cartoony, very, like, they could have done a lot with that down
instantly
the line.
Instantly connected with gamers as well.
Yeah, like, people
just
loved it.
Out of nowhere, it was such a unique and idiosyncratic aesthetic. People fucking loved it.
The one thing I could see with Tango specifically be a reasoning for them that I don't think is a sensible one, but that I have to assume it's something beyond a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
That it's their only Japanese studio that they have, and they're like further distancing themselves from any sort of Japanese market.
Yeah.
Right.
But that is also like fucking just crazy to me.
But
like,
they didn't even acquire them that long ago.
No, they were all crazy. These are all part of the Bethesda acquisition.
Yeah. But none of us particularly gelled with Hi-Fi Rush, but you know, it was still undeniably, like, I think a well-made game, had a lot of polish to it. We all really liked Ghostwire Tokyo. It's really talented developer, and they stepped on that little snail man.
Yeah.
Oh. I'm never going to see him again at the start of a game.
And then there's a bit that's come out, I think, post this, or it's just been recirculated about sort of the development of Redfall and the fact that it was really pushed by Microsoft, not Arkane Austin. It was sort of forced upon them to make a games as a service game.
Well, they were working on it before the acquisition, and there was going to be a PS5 version. So, like, they, and which got knocked down because they got acquired. So, like, a lot of it, they didn't really take that studio into being a Microsoft first party thing at any point, kind of.
Right.
Same with Hi-Fi Rush, where that was being worked on, and then they made an Xbox, and then they put it out on other things, and blah, blah, blah. So, it's just this weird, like, pulling the ripcord way too early on them. It's
or just never really intending on supporting them at all.
Yeah,
right?
Like, but then their whole messaging behind buying those studios was that how great is this that we can give them a place to make games, and that right. the whole point of Game Pass and being under a big thing like Microsoft is
the
risk is mitigated by having such a big company behind you.
Platforming more games.
Fucking obvious bullshit.
Yeah. This is kind of the thing with Microsoft where you see like anytime they talk about this stuff and like, you know, Phil Spencer going on that podcast and all that kind of stuff is that anytime they make an announcement or everything about them, you just always do feel like you're interacting with a business.
Right.
And that's true of everything, obviously. But a company like Nintendo or PlayStation, like the way they present things, you go, oh, these are creatives. These are people who are making fun escapism products where they like they care about the art of what they're making, and they care about the, you know, you do get more of a set, like people, they are better at masking it, they are better at like
Sony less so recently, like people have turned on that and their stuff with their like push towards games as a service and like
that's true
of stuff, the way the Helldivers stuff happened this week, which like is another whole thing, but I know
Microsoft,
what you mean. You
like,
get the
really,
sense that
really
they understand.
Egregiously. Yeah.
You get
yeah.
the sense that they understand that they're in a creative business, which
yeah.
takes some level of accepting that not at long term. So Microsoft's sort of line around this. It has been like Matt Booty was saying some stuff of like, I know, right? The fact that
get a real name like Doug Bowser.
I know.
The Matt Booty here. All citizens must be inside. He was saying that it's so that they can, you know, laser focus on their big successful franchises, basically, which A, you're fucking running into the ground. B, aren't relevant anymore.
Yeah. Mm.
Even with the work you intend to do to push them further into the ground. Like Halo and Gears are not big things these days.
Yeah.
Right. Call of Duty is, and you technically own that. But so to be able to have that again, you need to work on new things.
Ghostwire Tokyo 2. Like, you know, a lot of these things, they do take time. Like, not everything is going to be a smash hit right out of the gate with number one. A lot of franchises you can't... Uncharted's a great example. I remember number one being like sort of barely a blip, and it not being really until number two that people were like, this is a fucking really, really good game.
Well, even if it wasn't going to be Hi-Fi Rush 2 or Ghostwire Tokyo 2 that pop off, like, there's certainly not going to be anything else fresh coming from those studios because they don't exist anymore.
Well, they've got talent behind them. They've got a real, like, legacy bunch of, like, creators were in there.
Yeah, that aren't involved in this directly. If I was in the position where I'm talented enough in the video game industry that I can kind of choose where I want to work, it certainly isn't for Microsoft at this point,
right.
because I would not feel safe there.
If you're a small studio and you're like just getting by, you could use it, you know, a bit more money would be really helpful, and you start to hear, hey, Microsoft might be interested in acquiring you, you probably would be more likely to just be like, we'll just take our chances out here in the wasteland and nickel and dime our way along on our own back rather than
one of the other ones, go on the Epic store and get that little payout. And then, because like the other thing is that people have started speculating is like, well, these were some of the few games that you would get Game Pass for. They're unique games. Hi-Fi Rush specifically was one that was dropped on Game Pass like the day of. Like, these are the reasons that you would keep it. And now there doesn't, I mean, I have let my Game Pass subscription lapse, but it's because I hadn't played anything on it for a long time.
It's been a while since there's... And that's, again, that's what is so weird about this is, the like, what you're saying, Adam, about, like, them wanting to move away from more the Japanese side of stuff. It's like they were leaning on these games. Like, they really were putting them front and center. Like, they were their... Yeah, they were their things that they were doing, like, the big shadow drops with and, like, getting into that realm of, like... Yeah, this is what you do if you're Nintendo and you're Sony and you have these big tentpole things that people are interested in. You make moves like this where you kind of get people excited and engaged and talk. And now it is just a lot of like, oh, this third-party thing that came out 2 months ago, it's now on Game Pass, so you can finally play it if you've got it. It's like, that's not enough.
Yeah. It invalidates the very optimistic view of Game Pass that I think they put forward, and I have been, again, optimistic about for some time of like cool, this could be a new way of funding. But it's the exact same fucking shit that happened with Netflix that made everyone go off it, where like, oh, awesome, they're making these new things and really paying attention to it. And then, oh, that's cancelled immediately.
So yeah.
Why'd you bother in the first place?
They've done this thing that seems like magnanimous or creative first for a while. It turns out they've just been gathering data, and then they've cancelled the stuff that doesn't meet the targets. And like you said before, Knox, with, you know, where you would want to work, if you're a developer looking for a home for a game, it used to be that you would go on Game Pass, get a little cash payout, less than, you know, selling and you know, direct to public.
Well, the boost of like more people are going to play you because they've already got the service.
You get, I think, some kind of bonus, or you get money based on the amount of downloads. It's like, well, okay, if you're potentially going to start cutting games, start cutting studios, maybe Game Pass isn't the thing you're supporting, you know, into the future.
Yeah.
Then I can't rely on having my game on Game Pass for 3 years and racking up these numbers, because it just may not be there.
We don't know the money stuff of this, and like, maybe if you're looking at this purely as a calculator, this makes sense. But the point that, you were saying before of how it's a creative industry, it's much more long-term and complicated than just, you know, did this fucking sprocket that we made suit the market enough that people bought enough of this sprocket?
Yeah.
It's a different, more complicated thing, creative industries.
Yeah.
It's not wanky to say. It just is.
Well, you look at a separate, something different like thing.
You got to develop that attachment to something over time, and reaching separate audiences that gather together into a
a specific environment you need to create for the people who are working within it. Like,
yes, which was the other thing. I think it was the Arcane Leon guy who obviously was not affected. He was the one who put out the statement and was like, just speaking generally, these workplaces are getting worse and worse for creatives. Not an environment that is conducive to making good stuff in the first place.
The way that he put it was turning it into a Darwinian jungle, which is the case with, like, it is a broader issue with, like, the capitalist world at the moment, in my opinion. Like, it is a short-sighted, short-term, investor profit-driven environment and attitude at the moment, which does not translate to most people's job security or for this, like, idea of infinite growth is obviously insane to everybody. It's not about infinite growth. It's about trying to make so much bloated growth in the next 5 years that you get your payout and then you fuck off and you don't care if the building falls apart.
Right.
And like, the canary for that is fucking dead because the coal mines collapsed. What I mean? Like, it's so beyond the point of it is fucking not a sustainable way to live for people. And that's the thing that's collapsed around all of these people who've been unfortunate enough to be in it. It isn't because Redfall was bad.
Right.
And it isn't because, like, Hi-Fi Rush didn't meet their expectations and shit. It's because the expectations are insane.
Mm.
And the idea that everything needs to be Call of Duty is impossible and not sensible.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing, and I don't know really the specifics of how this is all working, but that game Animal Well that is coming out either this week or next week soon.
Yeah, Friday. May 9th.
Being published by Dunkey's new thing that he's set up.
Yes.
Like, that's such an interesting model, kind of as an alternative to this stuff we're talking about, of like a guy that is, you know, and this is the sort of the beginnings of like what you're talking, like if his publishing thing goes big enough, well then, like everything, it will turn into a business that has got to be focused on the bottom line. But for now, the idea of like this video creator who's like a fan, who's at the kind of at the front lines, being like, I reckon I know what it takes to have a fucking good game. So I'll pick them out and I've got a you know what I mean? Like, it is such an interesting, like, kind of grassroots, like, alternative to just like a big company getting into it because they're good with the numbers and good with the bottom line or whatever. It'll be really interesting to see like what sort of stuff he puts out from here. And does that lead to Filthy Casuals publishing?
Well, ultimately that's what it's all been building up to.
But no, I mean, that is such an interesting like alternative to, like, we are in this world where
we need alternatives.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's
un-fucking
believable that a $3 trillion company would have the gall to say that they don't have the fucking money.
Yeah. Mm.
It doesn't make financial sense to do this because they are skint. It doesn't make financial sense because their fucking bar is set at the point where you – achieve an insane result for us, or we throw you fucking out. It's a threat that is like completely undervalues any sort of creative process, which if you're in a creative industry, you have to fucking respect.
Yeah.
People have such a disdain for creative people when it comes to business things, because they don't fucking understand that some of it will be bad.
Yeah.
Right. And that is part of the risk of the industry you're in. It's the same as if you own a boat company, some of them will fucking spring a leak.
Mm-hmm.
If you, I mean, which isn't acceptable if you're a boat company and like Boeing planes are crashing and they're killing the fucking people who are explaining why. So like,
but it's not the equivalent, right? It's more like that, you know, when you're at boat building school, some of them will not float.
Yeah, or if you're trying to design new boats, it's R&D that's happening on the fucking fly, and you're putting out all your R&D projects.
That's right.
Like, we also, not to keep letting my own...
And also there's no fucking, sorry, the like governing body to assess the viability of boats. There's not as much fucking regulation around it.
Yeah.
The in America, the unionization thing has been a big topic that like we don't... Yeah, it's... I mean, again, as people point out when I talk about shit like this, I'm not a lawyer.
Not to keep letting my own personal biases seep in here, but there was that story years ago about Nintendo when they were sort of, I guess it would have been Wii U era when they were kind of tanking, and the higher-ups took pay cuts so that they wouldn't have to make layoffs, because they were like, we need to keep these people around. Like, we're not going to be in the toilet forever. Like, when we get... If we're going to get back out of this position, we're going to need these creative, talented people. So the answer isn't to just get rid of them just so that we keep making. And that's what this really reeks of, is like people on the top line being like, we don't want it. We don't want to take a hit of a couple of hundred thousand a year. Fuck that.
And it's a short-sighted attitudinal thing that is like a very, you know, I want to say American thing at the moment, but that is unfair. But it is like that culture.
It is as well, because they're kind of
capitalist, the way that that type of it works at the moment.
For sure. Like, this is very tangential, but there was a great piece. I think it's like the cover piece of Harper's Bazaar this week, where this guy did like a
Harper
massive
is fucking bizarre, to be honest.
Well, this
what
is
a weird dude.
This is an honestly, this is an out there story. It's about it's about the Writers Guild in America and how like. Even with the strikes and unionization and people really fighting for basic, you know, workplace rights, their wages have stagnated like a crazy amount over the past 50 years, where, you know, in say 1970 or whatever, you know, the average median wage or whatever for a Hollywood writer was $200,000, and now it's like 50 something.
So
it's like, even with that workplace protection, there is still a devaluing of those people.
Absolutely.
That goes on across not just that industry, but all creative industries now.
That's a broader, like, I agree. And it is like, if we're having the conversation at a large scale, there is a broad thing where like political views come into play of why cultural jobs are devalued, and all that shit is like sort of besides the point. But the idea of the profit they're not making, A, you haven't fucking owned them for long enough to know what it's going to be like under you. So you're just dropping the ball because you don't want to play with it.
Yeah.
And like, that was against the messaging you were giving, the promises you made to the people who were giving you the goodwill to be able to pass this enormous acquisition through courts and stuff. Like, it's a betrayal of all of that. And then the profit that you're implicitly saying isn't there is to the shareholders of your company, because every person working in that studio was profiting. They were earning a wage from it.
Yeah.
And, well, and also, long term, the point of having them there is so that one day they can fucking do something better.
Yeah.
I understand if those didn't meet your expectations, but you've got to have responsibility for that if you're owning these fucking companies with the stated purpose of, we want to be a place to foster creativity for these groups we are. And now you've immediately proven yourself to be,
and if a certain
blowing
game,
a fucking ton of smoke.
If a certain game hasn't been profitable enough for you, that's on you, because you're the publisher now. You've acquired them. You're the one selling their product, pushing it. You've got to be doing that work. So at a certain point, if this good game that's been well reviewed hasn't brought in what you thought it should, That's your fault.
And I'm not.
You've got your marketing department umbrella that's meant to be pushing that for you. And we're it's not on them.
We're not saying that if a studio is putting out shit after shit after shit,
right,
that you owe them charity. That's not the point. Yeah. It's that the tone of this and the method of this and the way that this has been done really appears as though they are not doing it sensibly.
It's like, not even that, like, this was an internal Microsoft games development studio that had made some good games for a while and then one bad one and it got shut down.
Mm.
It was a fully independent creative, you know, entity
that
got acquired and then got shut down within 18 months.
And they were under Bethesda still be making or Zenimax stuff. Or whatever, but I don't know, man. It's just...
But, like, Bethesda didn't shut them down. Like, you know, this is a result of this very... Like, a corporate acquisition is never actually for creative or consumer-first reasons. It's for money.
Yeah.
And so the you know, step two in the money process was shutting down this thing to make more money.
But I really do think that long-term, more money gets made by having people trust your brand to be
absolutely
creatively safe when you're... job for a consumer is to be a place to get creative things. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, well, I hate to keep bringing Tommy's personal biases into this, but Nintendo is, it's like, it's not like there's no example. Like, there is an example where a company has taken care of its employees, backed them in creatively. It has fostered a community, has fostered fans, and it has fostered like a dedication that has led to ongoing stability and profit.
Yeah.
There has to be some fucking extra thing, because like if it was purely, why the fuck does 343 still exist if this is your bar that has to be cleared? Mm. Like, obviously those games have sold well still, but I guess I've answered my own question.
Right? It's not about whether they're creatively, you know.
So long term, it just all goes down fucking hill because people trust you less and less and less and less because you keep putting it, like, you can't just put out Gears and Halo and Gears and Halo. They said that it did, but I've seen reports that it also didn't sell well, but that they explicitly said some number of months ago that they were happy with how it had done.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No, it's got to be numbers wise. It's got to be Game Pass numbers, which it seems like it is no longer enough of a justification for them to keep.
Well, which seems like Game Pass doesn't fucking work.
Yeah,
not enough people signed up to Game Pass because of this game, which is why, you know, if you're Netflix and you're paying for like part of why you're. What you're hoping you'll get out of that is people sign up because of this exclusive. But one thing alone can't do it. If you put one thing on there and then nothing else of note, that's the thing that's making people not get on. You know what I mean?
It seems like it's not a financial model that works, because it doesn't actually work for Disney or Netflix or Paramount Plus is about to go, you know, get acquired by someone because it doesn't, like, it just lost them billions of dollars.
Yeah.
So, like, Netflix only exists because of venture capital investment. Like, it's not a model that works, and I guess Microsoft have found that out and are about to move away from it.
I'll tell you one person who'd be rapt to hear all this and rubbing his little fingers together and then starting to get clickety clack clack clacking on that keyboard is our old friend Jason Schreck.
Oh, brother!
He's thinking Game of Thrones style.
Yeah,
series of books at this point.
Well, I'd love to see, because as we're recording this, it's sort of just happened in our time of recording.
Yes.
So there will be more details that we are getting wrong, because also it just overlaps so much with stuff that we have personal feelings about, which the creative industry money stuff is so mucky a lot of the time, and so short-sighted and incompetent often.
Yeah.
But like this in particular is really confusing, and it's also another straw making the camel get fucking angry, just because like so much, and then this one, it's just a very identifiable group of people who that seemed to be doing the exact thing that they were meant to be doing.
Right.
You know, like...
Because Microsoft had been so, like, and have been for the past 5 or 6 or 7 years, their point of difference has been, we want games to be everywhere. We want gamers to be able to play games where they want to in the most, you know... Accessibility has been a big thing for Microsoft. All of these things that are, like, pro-consumer... It's about enabling creativity to flourish and then get put in front of people who can consume it. It's just a betrayal of everything about that.
They
all
still,
of that
yeah,
ethos.
You're right. They still are ahead of the curve with so many things, even just the like the cloud gaming thing. Like
right.
You don't need to own any kind of console or anything. You can just, if you're happy to put up with like some of the technical issues and a bit of the lag, you can just get an Xbox Game Pass account and just play games on your iPad streamed through the cloud. If you've, yeah. you know, if you've got the connection, like that is so forward thinking. And you're yeah. right. That is so pro consumer. It's like, I don't need to spend hundreds of dollars on the box. I just need a controller that I can get cheap and the, whatever it is per month to have the thing. And like that's and stream it off something that I already own for other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is so accessible.
Yeah.
That's so forward thinking and pro consumer.
It's just like the reality check people that I can sort of, that thing people will say or think about it are like, well, the industry as a whole is on a downturn. Microsoft itself, or the Xbox part of Microsoft itself is on a downturn. What are they meant to do? Blah, blah, blah. Like, I understand that, but long term, like, it's a bad decision in terms of like No Man's Sky, a bunch of other games have proven, like with Redfall specifically, they were working on that still.
Right.
Yeah.
You can turn that shit around.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Tango Gameworks, whatever the reasons for shutting it down are, they are one of the most visible under your umbrella studios who have put out something that was on your console that people were excited about. Mm. You shut that down.
Mm-hmm.
So it just sends this message, even if on paper it doesn't make sense, it sends such a clear negative message to people.
Yeah.
That it really seems like a crazy bad idea. Like, people paid for DLC that was promised for Redfall that Microsoft's now told them you're not going to get. Okay, fuck you. Never
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
And just
yeah,
if
yeah.
you work in the industry too, like, yeah, this you would think being acquired by a company as big as Microsoft, it should be the golden ticket. It should be the like, okay, all these worries kind of fade away. But yeah, when you read those Jason Schreier books, it's like every developer is like, you constantly have the sort of Damocles hanging over you. And
right.
like, if you worked in the industry and seeing this, it's like there just is no protections. And if it potentially makes you a bit weary about going into, you know, getting that extra financial help or getting absorbed by the bigger company, it's like, that's a bad thing. Because those relationships can work out really well.
It's the same as with Google and shit. Like, the second something starts sort of not working, just this short-sighted, investor-driven, you know, like, we got to give returns to our
right.
fucking shareholders.
Yeah.
So we drop it. We drop it. The second, because it looks good to them. We drop
yeah.
it. Oh, this thing that wasn't making money. Yeah, we cut it out. Yeah. It's
yet,
so short-sighted. It's so fucking much of a waste of, like, human time.
Yeah. It's probably not seen as a complete contradiction internally, but they just spent, what, $6 billion buying Call of Duty?
$61 billion. Yeah.
So it's like...
Something like that, 62.
You... 63. It's just a clear, cynical reprioritization of like...
Right.
Yeah, okay, we did buy all these at smaller studios. Hey, maybe we did that to make it look like we weren't just... trying
yeah.
to monopolize this
yeah.
big and sort of wedge of
the arts and crafts shop out the front of the factory that's pumping sludge into the
yeah yes
well, and that's
stream.
The reason they
yeah.
shut them down rather than letting something else happen is to keep those IPs and keep
yeah.
competition away. And like the it's some thought in my head, but then off it went. Yeah, it's
basically in a few years' time, yes, you'll be able to play Xbox games on any screen that you own, and you can connect a Bluetooth controller, and it only costs, you know, like $10 a month, but you'll only be playing Call of Duty or Diablo
yeah.
4.
Yeah,
or
that's what I was going to say. So fast for this to happen to, that they can't have had any fucking intention to keep up with it.
No, of course not.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like it's so quick.
It's not like it's been a series of failures.
Right.
Like every game they've put out.
These
has
are
been
failures they knew they were
reviewed.
Inheriting.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah,
they bought
these,
companies yeah. while these games they've put out were in production.
Yeah.
So what if you didn't buy them for that,
yeah.
what the fuck did you... Like, you bought the fucking house, and then you showed up and you were like, I don't like the color. I'm going to burn it down.
Yeah, but you'd
already, but there were people living in the fucking house
and you'd
already
booked the bulldozers months ago because you were always going to do it.
Why the fuck isn't he wearing banana peels on his feet? He's going to get roping. That's it. We're closing the studio.
You're out the door. You don't understand monkeys.
Here's a vicarious vision for you. The unemployment line. Yeah. Get fucked.
You're going to be living vicariously by watching anyone with a job. God, it's fucking shit. And
anyway.
Yeah.
But it truly, like, I mean, they, you know, Nintendo have had second party developers for them, like, go under. I don't quite know what the people that were making the, that used to make the Mario and Luigi RPGs, they've folded. I'm not quite sure what the reason is, but it's not Nintendo acquiring them and going like,
no,
we can't be fucked anymore.
And it's not like they're perfect. They sound like a hard place to work, and there's plenty of stuff they've done that, you know, but fucking hell, man. It's just so obviously shit, this one.
And we've talked about this, for, like you said.
And a lot of them are.
This was like first, we woke up, saw this news and came straight in here to record. So we're this is why it's so top of mind.
Well, and it's just one of those tipping point things where like so many people getting the same exact treatment across so many different industries at the moment in the world where it's not even just about games and Microsoft. It's just like, I can't believe this is how people are thinking and getting away with that way of thinking at the moment.
Well, we love playing games. We love talking about games. And then like a lot of the time we spend on this show is talking about, ends up having to be talking about another brutal, you know, studio closure. It's a bummer.
I like being able to talk about games because they exist and they're getting made by developers.
And they're interesting and different. And like, if this was the Gears of War podcast, I don't think we'd still be doing it. You know?
Yeah. Let's, we got to go back and we got to re-edit our Hi-Fi Rush podcast and just be really glowing about it.
That's true, yeah.
Just edit the file and be like, see, we loved it. We did everything we could.
I want games that I don't even personally like to still exist, though. That's how big I am.
It was creative and different and interesting.
The gameplay was cool. Yeah. We just didn't like some of the tone of it, and that's okay.
It's literally not about the content, is it? It's about it's about the process, and it's about basic, you know, workplace rights and the freedom to be creative.
And yeah, I would have loved to see another bite of the cherry of Ghostwire Tokyo. We'd love to see a sequel to that.
One of you brought up that cunt Damocles before as well. That fucking always stand there being like, I'll get ya. I'll fucking get ya.
Yeah.
And always Damocles the one who had the sword hanging above his head.
I think he was under this.
No, but it's the sword of Damocles.
But I guess people just, whoever owned the sword.
Oh, that's brutal. A sword that chops your head off and then they name it after you.
Yeah.
That's like some Lou Gehrig's disease shit. Just his last words as it's dropping down. Please don't name the sword after me. Yeah. Name it after the guy who's holding it.
Well,
it's him.
The ice bucket challenge of Damocles is happening again. The fact that that is the way that people in my favorite type of job, but like the people who make my favorite things, it's the way they're all having to feel and live and be under the impression that they are so disposable.
Yeah.
And like people take advantage of the fact that it's people's dream job and whatever by, you know, the second that people want to do the work they're doing, people exploit the fuck out of that.
Oh, that's like you said before, that's capitalism, right? Yeah. It's the fantasy of infinite growth is coming to an end.
Hopefully.
But in some instances,
It'll either be forced,
It's because people are getting fired or, like, that's the thing. Like, Microsoft as a company is not going to run out of money.
No.
But perhaps, like you said, this is a tipping point. Potentially, this is this is one of the straws that'll break the camel's back of people being like, well, this is a system that doesn't actually benefit anyone except like four people that get paid $10 million a year.
Yeah.
Which, a lot of growth coming in the guillotine industry. Well, I'm willing to bet.
Hades 2.
Then after it, all of you guillotine makers are being fired. We don't need you anymore. Wait a minute. The sales are increasing again for some reason.
Hades 2 is out in early access, but who gives a fuck? Because the studio will probably be closed before it comes out. Adam, you've been playing it.
Yeah. Just briefly, we mentioned the Helldivers thing as well. There was a bit of there was a lot of hubbub around that this week, and I don't know. People have probably read about that. I don't have much to say about it.
I mean, so it was a Sony instituted thing that you had to have a PSN account, even if you were playing on PC. And then enough people complained that they backflipped on it, which is good
because there's countries where you can't get the PSN.
Yes,
is the main thing. Yep. So it's like you and it and you didn't have to do that for a bit. And so
it was always a requirement, but they turned it off because it was so broken at launch,
right?
That layer wasn't helping or something.
Yeah.
And so they shut it down, but were selling it in countries where you couldn't like legally sign up for a PSN account. People were saying like, well, you can just pretend to be from a different country and it doesn't matter, but you shouldn't have to. And they've turned it off, but it will be required for Ghost of Tsushima and seemingly all of Sony's things going forward.
Right.
But Ghost of Tsushima it won't? I thought it didn't.
No, it does.
It does? Oh, no.
For the multiplayer.
And
then, but like I've got so many fucking accounts and I'm so cynically accepting of this stuff now that it didn't, I'm not bothered by it, but I do understand why people are.
Someone said to me, you will never have to make another account for something in your life. I'd be so happy. That honestly would boost my like overall mood in my life by about 30 to 40%.
Holy shit.
Wow.
You're never going to have to remember another fucking password.
Or in China, right? It's all WeChat.
Exactly. So, yeah, sure. That's good. It is. Log into one thing and it's done.
I do agree that in principle is good.
From a user experience point of view, I suppose, but a lot of conveniences are put in front of you to make other inconveniences more palatable.
You've got to sacrifice a lot.
The only login I want is a log in the wall of my cabin out in the woods.
Woo!
One log per wall.
Yeah,
I'm freezing, the rest of it, brother.
It could be stone.
Sick of all these logins.
You need to make an account for the log shop. Oh, I'm just going to get some flowers for my mum for Mother's Day. Need to fucking make an account. Everything needs a fucking account.
The guy
that
you trade with for pelts, he doesn't trust you unless you tell him the password.
Exactly.
I keep forgetting it. Well, I'll mail it to you.
Get me on the highway to the danger zone because I'm a fan of logins.
Oh, yeah.
I'll take them all.
Oh,
I'll just
make
temporary email accounts that I never use again.
Yep.
That's the way around it.
But
no,
yes.
I want to be the fucking end bit of Splash Mountain. Log out.
I want to be Sesame Street, one account for everything. I guess. You guys were doing them,
no,
and they seemed so
good.
Much fun.
No, that's
it's not bad.
It just, you had to think for too long that it didn't. It just.
Well,
listen,
no,
I'm exhausted by
everything.
Being mad at Microsoft.
No, he counts everything.
Oh, he does count everything. Yeah.
He's the one account for everything, is how I tried to say it, but I didn't commit
enough. It worked. I'm pro it. I'm
Once
into
again,
it.
My lack of commitment has.
If I'd had to sign up to hear it, I don't think I would have been as keen.
Well, you're automatically signed up the first time you hear it.
Yeah.
Well, I've shut it down.
Auto renew.
Damn it.
Yep.
Can we hide the unsubscribe button down the bottom? Or when they click unsubscribe, make them put in their email a second time and they might not bother.
Oh, yeah.
That's
anyway,
a good one.
Hades 2, brother.
Yeah.
I have been playing it. That came out of nowhere.
Hades 2 nuts.
Mm-hmm.
That's how
we need
many
to time stamp this app in the description of when it starts to get positive and uplifting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, lucky we talked for about 7 minutes about something good and then spent 50 minutes on something negative.
That was like
that is the compliment sandwich, the shit sandwich thing they always say. It's like that bread isn't going to make the shit taste better.
No,
but it was
true.
Real like American style, like one that you see on Instagram where it's like the bun is like that and then the fillings are like that and you're like, how are you going to get your mouth around that? Yeah.
Hades 2 is in early access now. I had no idea, and I think I didn't check, but I believe that they just sort of did it and hadn't told anyone this was going to be a day.
From the reaction, I got that impression too. Yeah.
Yeah, but it came out yesterday in early access for everybody. I jumped in. I'm not a big early access guy most of the time.
No,
but
you're usually too scared. Like, it's not going to be worth it. I'll have to do it all again when it comes out, or it won't be as good.
I'm real Scooby-Doo. Like, I'm up the back shivering, watching Fred and shit going.
You go first. Yeah.
You used to get those newspapers delivered that told you the headline in the future. You didn't even want to read them.
Yeah.
No.
You think about all the good you could have done, and you were like, no, I'm too scared.
No. I don't want to get involved.
No, yeah. I want to wait until they've kind of like worked out the kinks in the paper.
Someone else can tell me.
The Garfield's not finished yet. I want to wait until they've kind of inked that and have the joke properly written.
This is quite far along, further than Hades 1 was at its early access launch, I believe.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Well, you've heard it again, brother. I'm here to... you've heard it in stereo.
Yeah.
Delayed.
Yeah, it's like still, I think they said like at least the end of 2024 before like a full release.
Okay.
But going in on it now. I think I'm only going to play it for a bit and just sort of get a flavor, but I've got some flavor right now. Mm-hmm. It's good. Ooh. Hades is fucking fun as shit.
You got a fever to the flavor.
This is second Hades. Oh, I wish I could remember more of that fucking song to join in. You ever play Hades? You did, right?
Yeah. I played it in early access, actually.
Oh, great.
And again, it was like a year before it came out properly.
They really took on a lot of feedback and refined that for ages.
I guess there was enough of a gap between me playing in an early access and playing the real one that I didn't notice much of a difference, but I'm sure there were tweaks and improvements.
Well, so with this, the sort of stuff that they say up front is like very noticeably missing.
Mm-hmm.
Ending.
Right.
They're working on a whole other area for it as well.
Yep.
So if you've never played it, Hades 1 before, Hades is a sort of top-down isometric combat-focused game, a roguelike, where you are running through several different distinct environments, going kind of room to room, fighting a variety of enemies using some very fun, tight-feeling combat, and getting upgrades along the way, some of which are only for that run, some of which are currencies to buy permanent upgrades, and so on.
And the kind of unique thing about Hades was it had an ongoing story that had good writing and good characterization, and that was the thing that made it stand apart from Rogue, for example.
The fact that you are dying and being respawned at the start is part of the in-world story.
Right.
And you're interacting with all these like characters from Greek mythology,
yes,
gods, who all kind of act like they're on a season of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah,
they're all very,
very
catty
dramatic.
And bitchy too, and dramatic.
A lot of what you're getting is like, oh, well, I heard this fucking guy said this about me. Like, I don't care about fucking this.
Yeah.
And it's all that attitude.
How wonderful to see you again.
That's all back and the same in this.
Right.
But it all feels different and fresh enough where it's got that same exact core but with enough tweaks to make it feel really different and new.
Right.
Are there any new characters, new gods, like Guido Hatzis, Con the Fruiterer?
Oh.
Nothing like that. You are...
Russell Crowe in that Thor movie where he was doing a Greek accent.
You are this witch girl whose name I forget. And you,
what girl?
Witch girl.
Who? Oh,
fuck.
You fell for it.
I did.
You motherfucker. Now that's not an early access joke. That's like
that's
polished. Like version 15.0.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's a remaster of an old one.
That's okay in video games, Knox. If anything, people like that more because it reminds them of when they were younger.
They like it on podcasts too. You could be plenty successful by doing that.
Oh yeah.
Adam's like, I wish I could shut down this studio.
Now who's being a catty god, Adam?
Well, just a catty peasant. Don't even have the powers to back it up. You're a witch girl and she's gone too far. You're a witch girl who is running through all these different environments where you are going to get revenge, very similar to the first game.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Looking to get revenge on Kronos, the Titan of time.
Yep.
And this is your trial to try and do that.
Right. Start off with, I assume, one weapon.
Yes, you have a staff, which, so here's some differences from the first one.
Mm-hmm.
You've got an attack and a special attack. That's sort of the same. With the staff, it's a physical attack is the normal one, and then a projectile attack is a special attack.
You've got a video game staff.
Yeah.
I hope I don't get laid off soon.
Not anymore.
It's going around.
It's gone too far. If you press B, instead of that being your sort of projectile cast thing that you had, that now makes sort of like a hex circle around you.
Okay.
You know how witches, when they cast stuff, they'll get the pentagram thing on the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of a circle inside of which will be an effect.
Mm-hmm.
You are going through the game, and same as the first one, picking up boons from gods, some of them new, some of them returning,
right,
which will give you different types of elements on your attacks or special effects that will happen when you use each of the different things. You can get them on your sprint. You have a sprint now, which I think is different.
You had a dash.
That was a dodge, and you've got that, and then if you hold A, you're sprinting around.
I think that's new.
It's been long enough since I played Hades 1 that some of it is I'm unable to define, but so
this I know this is meant to be a pitch for Hades 2, but it is making me just go boot up Hades 1 again.
Same. Oh yeah. Hades 2 is great though. You've got like a magic meter now, which rather than having like a limited number of casts, that magic meter is between all of your attacks. If you hold them down, it'll do a bigger version of each of those attacks. You are dodging around. You've got a tool now as well as your weapon that you decide to take on each run, which will let you gather a different type of resource each time. So you'll have like either a pickaxe that will let you mine things that you see in the world, or like a little spell book that will send lost souls back to your place. And each of them is just building a different currency back at your base
right.
that mm-hmm. you are using to buy different upgrades. So you're deciding which currency you want to work on for that run.
Okay.
Deciding which attack you want to work on. There's some other stuff in there too. The story is very similar tone of writing where it's like sort of doing a funny
mm-hmm.
thing and everyone's like a bit like you've got
bit
sort
deadpan.
Of... deadpan. It's a little more directly wacky this time, I would say.
Like funny how? Like funny ha-ha?
Like funny like I'm a clown, like I'm here to amuse you. It's funny like that you've got like a roommate basically who's this ghost who will talk to you like in a haunting way because you're learning to be a witch.
Right.
You're at this sort of like school.
Okay.
A school for witches and wizards.
Hang on a minute.
Interesting.
Now hang on a minute.
And so like you've got this teacher woman.
Last time you were in Hades, right?
You were.
Okay.
You are in Hades too. Well, no, you're in like some woods to begin with, and there's a relation that you learned very early on, but I just don't want to say it, to the events of the first game.
Okay,
this is
cool.
a direct sequel,
right.
and
cool.
some stuff has happened in between, but there's a reason connected to the first game that you were right. going to kill Kronos.
Right, cool.
And so like you've got like this kind of roommate who is learning to be a ghost, and so she's trying to haunt you sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and then her
Moaning
portrait
Myrtle.
Will change and be like, how was that? Did I haunt you all right? Blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Like, oh, my, blah, 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 blah. That's comedy.
yeah, no disagreements here.
There's a couple of bits of the writing where I was like, nah, like there's a literal record scratch at one point and stuff like that where I'm like, oh, maybe, yeah. Blah, blah, blah.
I wonder if that's a thing that you're getting deep feedback about in the early access.
Yeah.
Just all the little...
I thought about sending in being like, that's not funny. I don't want to do that at all.
He just sent in a new script. I've punched it up for you guys.
And he's in
Enjoy.
It. He's in it, and so is like Tails.
Yeah. It's a lot of people just getting the word witch, W-I-T-C-H, confused with W-H-I-C-H.
Oh, so it's way funnier now then.
Yeah. I'm liking it.
Yeah, cool.
The new environments look very different and unique. And
art style's still the same, I
art
assume.
Art style's the same, but it looks fucking awesome.
Oh, great.
I love the way it looks. It's so crisp
mm-hmm.
and so colorful. The new characters that you're meeting along the way who give you certain different new types of upgrades. For example, there's like a spider who spins clothes for you to wear.
Okay.
So you can put on like this top that gives you like some armor over the top of your health. And while the armor is still there, will give you an effect as well.
Oh, nice.
So after you take a certain amount of damage, you lose the effect too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's all good shit. It's all more Hades with new mechanics and stuff. Lay it over the top of it to, really make it feel fresh, even though I played a bunch of the first one, but it was a couple years ago now that I played it. I'm into it. I'm liking it. I think if you're keen, then the early access version is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
It's feeling tight and like everything. Like the only stuff I've really noticed being particularly like early access-y is like in the main hub, for example, there's like a little dog and a stoat or something that you can feed, but they're just sort of this static sprite that doesn't interact with you when you do it. Stuff like that. That's clearly like a couple of sound effects that maybe seem a little placeholdery.
Right.
Stuff like that, but it feels very, very good already.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I'm looking forward to playing it. I'm not gonna. Yeah. Early access is never like those little things that you're mentioning would annoy the hell out of me. So I just don't like the idea of feeling like I'm playing something that's not finished.
Right.
But, yeah.
I think you certainly have to be of a certain type of mindset about it where you kind of want to participate in this
part. Yeah, you're excited that you're getting to, like,
Be
in on the ground floor.
And it's, I knew I was going to get it when it came out. Figured I'd give it a little go now. Mm. And also as almost like a pre-order demo.
Right.
It's
very cool as that. I got up to, like, the second area boss and don't think I'll play much more than that just for this early access bit.
Right.
But it's cool. It seems like it's full steam ahead and going to be good.
It would be a bummer to have like a great run on this one and be like, you know, that's what would
reset
that. I'm about to get to the little ending and it just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
I don't know what's there in place of it. They've got like a roadmap of what they're sort of working on and what they're aware of. And it's all being done well, but it is early access. And But it seems like when it comes out full, it's going to be fucking great. If you like the first Hades, this is...
Right.
Well, something that is out in full and is fucking great
Ooh, okay.
is a little game called Children of the Sun.
Tell me more.
This came out maybe a month ago.
All right.
Tell me more.
Pardon? Tell you more?
Yeah.
Well, what I said to Ben was also directed at you.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does he have a car? Tell me more.
Does Ben have a car?
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he got a car.
Yeah.
Did you get very far?
Yeah, I fucked Ben.
Fuck.
Yeah, this is a game.
Did she put up a fight?
You are in Children of the Sun. You are a she that's putting up a fight.
Okay,
I'll say that much.
All right.
Who are you fighting? What are you doing? What's going on?
You're fighting a cult. You've escaped from a cult.
All right.
And the cult have, I believe, they've killed your parents. So you're out.
Shit.
You're out for revenge.
Yep.
This game is a first person shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Puzzle game.
This sounds up my alley.
I'd say
puzzle game top line, first person shooter, not really a first person shooter.
Just a first person puzzle game?
So basically.
Like a Witness?
No.
Okay.
So the setup is each level is you are sort of on the outskirts of like basically like a compound mm-hmm. of where this cult are. And there'll be up the top of the screen, it'll tell you how many of these cult guys are sort of lurking around. You're kind of moving around the perimeter of the area. So you're only moving left and right to start with. So you're kind of like moving around this space, getting the lay of the land. You've got your sniper scope. You can sort of use that to zoom in and kind of like look around and tag where mm-hmm. all the people are. And so then, let's say there's four people, then you're picking off your first guy in the line of your scope. You're shooting them. Bullets going through first person, taking them out. Then once it's taken them out, time kind of pauses or slows down to very, very, very slowly, but basically time's freezing. You're then looking around the space for your next target and then you're choosing the trajectory of the bullet from there.
Ooh,
so basically you're having to take out all of the people in this area, but going from target to target to target.
One bullet.
One right. Magic bullet.
You got to do it in one sort of like da, da, da. And then like when you do the level, it kind of like zooms out to bird's eye view and shows you the little path that you took.
Right.
And you get bonuses for things like headshots if the target was moving when you took them out, you know, how quickly you did it. There's you can blow up the engine tank of cars, so you might be able to take out like a couple of people at one time, and mm-hmm. then it shows you like a global leaderboard of like people's scores and stuff and where you rank. Basically you're in the beginning of it when you're sort of prowling around the perimeter, you're basically looking for, well, if I take him out, he's behind a wall, so then the bullet isn't going to be able to travel from there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're sort of looking at the best way to chart your trajectory.
Right.
You also get the ability you can like in midair, you can kind of pause the bullet and sort of pivot it slightly.
Right.
And you also end up unlocking a thing where if you hit two people in their weak spots, you get the ability to stop the bullet midair and fully pivot around.
Right.
Again. So you get like an extra full range of movement go.
Right.
So like,
it's making me think of like, you know, that like pipe game where water's going in and you got to spin the pipes around and sort of solve the maze of the pipes.
Yeah.
It's like that with like, I don't know, super hot.
It's it's clearly very super hot inspired. And it's cool to see like a, you know, so many games get made that are like, oh, the people clearly made this and then they just made it again. This is like taken clearly a love of that and turned it into a, like a different format, sort of into its own thing.
Mm.
But so, for example, there's an early on level where you've got, I think it's like seven people and like three of them are on, there's like a little bungalow kind of thing, like a on like up on a second story. So there's like three people. Like
the bungalow high to me, a new bungalow roof on a second story bungalow.
Fuck, I'd never thought of that.
That's why they call it a bungalow.
We got to get Queensland on the phone.
Yeah, fucking what do you want? Hello?
So you've got like three guys kind of on the ground. You've got three guys up in the bungalow. And then there's a guy who's kind of doing laps, kind of going up and down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
So people are moving when you're hitting people, when the bullet's traveling, people are moving a little bit. There's like a little bit of motion once you start the play. So with that level, for example, you're having to kind of time it. So you need that guy who's going up and down the stairs, you need him to be about halfway.
Right.
So that you can get a guy on the bottom and then sort of, you know, aim up from there, mm-hmm. get him on the stairs. Then from him, you go to the person in the doorway. Because if you're just on the ground, you can't get up. You can't. Yep. The bullet can't get up through the window and hit people up there.
Okay. Yep.
So there's a bit, and there's like one where there's a couple of guys standing around in a field, and then there's two guys in a car just like doing burnouts, doing like donuts around. So you're having to like, again, time where they are, be able to get the guys that are static, stationary, and then, you know, work out the timing to then be able to like get into the car, which is kind of like slowly moving
right.
as you're doing this run. It's great. It's got this really satisfying style. It's like when you pull this off, when you like solve like the puzzle of it, and all of them, there's like a couple of different ways you can do it. Like
right.
you can kind of get lucky and sort of cheese it a little bit in some of them. But yeah, getting a good run, getting a good score for it, it is like, yeah, it's so satisfying, and it's such a cool conceit and premise, and each new level and seeing how it's like ratcheting up what it's adding in and the number of people that are there, and like it's got this like really tense, like it's all at night, it's all like, yeah, sort of a comic booky sort of style. There's like really creepy looking cult dudes just sort of lurking around. It's yeah, I can't recommend it enough. It's great. It's so unique. It's so cool. Satisfying. Yeah.
Children
really,
of the
really
Sun.
Cool. Yeah. Like, I think it's Steam only at this point.
Okay.
But right. yeah, check it out for sure.
Like Trains in the 1800s.
Sure.
Yeah. All right.
I can't believe we've never heard that joke on the pod before.
I can't believe that I've never seen it.
Yeah.
That can't be right.
Yeah, no, it's probably been done.
Which?
Well, that'll do it for this week.
That's us for another week.
Big old rant episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Couple of nice little games to play.
Yeah.
Hades 2 and Children of the Sun.
Are yeah.
There's a, by the way, there's a demo of Children of the Sun, which
awesome.
is a good like 6 or 7 levels. Or so like a, you know,
great.
Decent enough chunk to sort of get your head into it. Yeah, really recommend checking it out.
I'm going to give that a whack.
It's really satisfying.
Fuck
it's
yeah.
really fun. Yeah, if you liked Super Hot, this will scratch the same kind of itch.
Yeah,
and
nice.
If you never played it, well, I think you're in for a treat.
Yeah.
I think we've got Animal Well yes. next week, I think, is out by the time we record again.
Yep.
I definitely want to have a look at that.
Yep. I'm going to keep playing Stellar Blade, which I'm enjoying.
Oh, yeah, I finished Stellar Blade.
Yeah.
We'll talk about it more next week.
Oh, and if you want us to do a Final Fantasy VII sealed section, let us know, I guess.
I was thinking we'll probably end up talking about it with Game of the Year stuff at the end of the year.
That's
maybe
true.
A bit more
yeah, maybe there's true. Some time.
Detail.
Yeah, but I also, yeah, I finished that and it's good.
I've been playing yeah. a bit of Mother 3, but I'll talk about that next week.
Nice.
Well, now you know our plans.
Yeah.
We're going to cancel them before.
We've doxed ourselves by revealing our calendar.
Yeah.
Everyone will know we're at home.
Don't come and find me on Steam and chat me.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Filthycasuals.com.au. Get onto the Patreon. Get our bonus show every week. A whole extra hour of content that we do. Weekly for the patrons.
Yeah.
Get onto the YouTube channel.
It's good shit. We love the people being on Patreon, by
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
It really, really, really helps us out make this. So, yeah. Have a look.
And
see
you
if
get,
it's for you.
It's a full different podcast where we've got a whole bunch of other shit we did in the week just to talk about on that episode. Tommy went and saw a real depressing movie. We've been touching on The Jinx as we've been watching that.
Oh, yeah.
We've got a bunch of stuff that we talk about on a little podcast that we used to call Nintendo 69.
Yeah, helps us out heaps. Have a look on the Patreon.
Yeah, go check that out.
In the description.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for listening, guys. We will see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
Oh, you guys should re-record that wearing gloves. People will be wondering how you're holding the mic for so long. They'll think you've got hand burn.
That's a really good suggestion.
All right, Miyamoto. Get out of here.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.